Welcome to Lightning Bug, a celebration of grassroots progressive politics in rural Pennsylvania. We stand for the protection of all people, the environment, and the rights enshrined in our Constitution. We support an informed citizenry and equal opportunity for all to achieve the American dream. We as constituents will hold our elected officials accountable. We are committed to equality, inclusion, acceptance, and fairness. We are lights in the night. We are hope for our future. We are not alone. We are Lightning Bug. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lightning Bug. And boy, do we have a packed agenda today. And we have Taylor that's with us today again.
Exactly. And I actually brought my tuxedo just
I don't know what was going on.
God.
You can just picture it.
Taylor looks handsome. Very snazzy.
I know. And shout out to Dwayne, who plays the intro music live every time. I bet you thought it was recorded.
Listeners don't realize.
What level of professionalism Dwayne brings to the podcast?
Oh my goodness! You know, I just realized that my triangle's in the other room. I'm going to have to grab that.
Well, I guess we don't have any chicken and waffles.
Are you kidding? So we have a lot actually that could work with that. I think.
True.
And so on the agenda for today, Taylor is going to share his story, his origin story.
Personal story.
I'm really looking forward to hearing that. We're going to talk a little bit about the Blue Wave and a Blue Lift, and that'll be some local news there. We'll give a nod to what's happened in Philadelphia with the Eagles and some people that are in the running for this court that we're concerned about. And we'll talk about kids at the border. We just have a packed, and a nod to the California race too. There's a lot going on. So let's dig right in. So Taylor, why don't you, we all had our shot at doing this and talking about what brought us to this moment of doing the work that we're doing. And why don't you share that conversation with the people at Lightning Bug.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, I've given a lot of thought to my personal story.
Okay.
It's something that I've actually, you know, I've been doing organizing for a while, and it's something that I've actually personally struggled with, because I don't think there was ever one specific moment.
You didn't have the light bulb moment.
I don't think there was a light bulb moment for me. But, you know, I remember reading... you know, I was the person in elementary school that was reading, you know, Friends of the Earth, you know, action, you know, magazines, newsletters.
That's cool.
I feel like I was always, you know, cued in with a lens towards justice.
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder if that was, I regularly attended the Unitarian Universalist church growing up, so I wonder if that was... you know, values. I think I got a lot there.
Sure.
And you know, I'll also say that growing up, being in such an overwhelmingly conservative area during the Bush years, like I already felt different in terms of like other dudes, you know, like I was not one for like roughhousing.
Did
or
you
like
say other dudes?
Or I always felt
he didn't want to be like the other dudes, Dwayne.
We're not going to be like the other dudes
you
anymore.
Yeah,
no,
dudes anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't like a lot of the other kids, and so I always felt maybe a little bit like an outsider.
Okay.
And so I feel like I've just always identified, with. And it tried my best to stand with people on the outside, the Anoim, as Jesus would say. And so I don't have a particular light bulb moment, but I remember getting involved in the Obama campaign in 2008 and going canvassing with Steve Astoa Hardcastle and Shamokin Dam and registering people to vote and talking with them about the election and the importance of the 2008 election. And it felt to me like I was doing something and contributing and living out the values that I was espousing to others.
So what were those? I mean, you're talking about being the outsider. So
yeah.
How did that make you feel like when you got involved? And like what said that this was the direction I needed to go?
So, I mean, I think two reasons. And one was feeling like I could do something that was working towards something instead of just feeling othered, like being productive. And I would say, proactive. Yeah, exactly. So that was one. And the other thing I would say is the sense of community and fellowship amongst activists and amongst the movement. I think I was really, I loved, working in that office, which is actually at 111 Market Street in Mondragon Bookstore, before nice. It was a bookstore. I loved the Obama office, and it was the Kerry office before. But I loved that sense of camaraderie and working together as a team. And I just felt like I was doing something productive that was helping people. And I was part of a team that was, what's the word I'm looking for? Affirming of who I was or who I am. And, yeah. And I didn't feel othered there. I was part of a team,
Right.
So I would say two reasons there.
Yeah.
And
I think that's great. I think that team element to it and that sense of community is maybe something that we should talk about more, because I think that is what ends up getting a lot of people or keeping a lot of people involved.
Absolutely. I just a quick story here. We reorganized as the Union County Democratic Committee, and things
just
were
just this past week, right?
Just on Monday, yeah. And things were getting a little bit tense and leading up to it. And we had an hour scheduled for the meeting, and I advocated strongly, and I ended up organizing it and got it done. We should have a happy hour afterwards, at the town tavern, just let off some steam. Everybody, we'll invite everybody. I made a Facebook event and invited all kinds of people. So we had a lot, basically everybody from the committee and then other area Democrats come. And it just totally, I felt, was a pressure valve, because it's,
if you're in a
meeting and things get tense, it's good to go and have a cocktail afterwards and let some steam off and say, hey, sorry, if I was getting a little tense there, but, we're all on the same team here.
Yeah.
So today is Wednesday, June 6th. So you had that meeting 2 days ago. And we had a meeting that was similar to that yesterday at Linda and Denny Artley's home.
Yes.
Which was just, wasn't that amazing?
Oh, it's perfect. Like, what a perfect location. They didn't know that by having us at their home for this meeting that's now our permanent meeting place. So
we've let
them know that, and they're, I think, charging us rent now. So I'm not sure how to work something
well,
out.
Well, they had some incredible food there. Her mom just makes, like, she has perfected carrot cake. There's no question about it.
Oh, my gosh.
It was really good.
You can't beat a good carrot cake.
No. And their little dog, Princess, was, like, running around the yard. She was so cute.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful yard and all the birds. And it was just
a very nice night. It was nice to still do the work, but in a setting that was more relaxed and more comfortable.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we all just felt better being there.
And it just kind of builds that camaraderie that you had mentioned, the idea of us building commitment to each other. And that's what it really takes, like that building of commitment.
Yes.
And that's something that a lot of organizations really strive for. I think too many times we end up in situations where we are at an organizational meeting and we hope that someone shows up or we hope that someone volunteers for something. And I think when we actually have that commitment to each other, that we know each other, we know our stories, that just comes naturally. That we're going to say, Linda stood up for me, I'm going to stand up for her.
Definitely.
or that kind of thing. And
having these long-term relationships, you can be like, hey, look, I know you really thrived in this role 4 years ago, so I'm like, you like doing this, so like, can you help us out in this way again, and I'll do the thing that I like to do. And just knowing each other's strengths and weaknesses as people is
It's that team building. Yeah. That, you know, you have different players on a team.
Right.
You know?
So that brings me to the idea of the blue wave. Okay. Yeah. Now we've seen, like, physically at sporting events what a wave looks like,
yes.
Right? And that's teamwork, right?
Yeah.
You can't do a wave by yourself. You look really stupid, right?
So our listeners
here's my wave.
We're all sitting here doing the wave
by each other. You can hear the roar of the wind across the microphone. Right? So yeah, but you look pretty silly trying to do a wave by yourself, right?
Yeah, it actually, you guys look really silly.
It takes work to do that and coordination.
Should put more deodorant on.
Let's stop the wave right now. Listen, I think the blue wave is gone. Is the mic melting? I don't know. No, it's okay. It's good. It's all good. I hope. So that makes me think about that. And I mean, unless you have no pulse, you have heard the term blue wave, right?
Yes.
If you've attended a political meeting or a rally or checked out social media, turned on a TV or a radio, you've heard the word blue wave. And a lot of times, I think that the word blue wave is used almost as an applause line. Like I'll hear a politician speaking, right? And then they'll say, and the blue wave, and you know, all this roar and, you know, happens. And
picture taking. Everybody say blue wave on three.
It's like being incorporated. In fact, I'm thinking of calling our barbershop group for DemFest on June 30th. Which you can check out on Eventbrite.
And on Facebook.
Yeah, at the DemFest PA Facebook page. You can get your tickets.
I've also got 10 tickets to sell still. So if you need a ticket, hit up Taylor Lightman.
I also have 8 tickets to sell. So we're all just going to pitch ourselves. But continue.
Yeah. I was thinking of calling us the Blue Wave Barbers. That would work. I keep on coming back to Jason Kandor, and you know, and he said, you know, that the blue wave is not a weather event. It's a force that we have to create through hard work and activism all across the country. And of course, we know Jason is with Let America Vote. He's their president, right?
Yes,
and ran for office.
Oh,
yeah, founder. And so, you know, I think about it, and I think about how there are some people at meetings and so forth thinking that showing up to a meeting or doing something on social media is actually participating in the blue wave. And it's not.
Well, I would say it is.
It's the first step into the wave.
Yeah, the first step. Okay.
It's pretty low on the ladder. Maybe your feet's getting wet, something
like that. But let me just share an experience. I was at a meeting, and I go to lots of meetings all over the state, okay? I was at a meeting where people talked about why they're motivated. And these were a lot of people for the first time that were politically motivated. And they talked about things that they wanted to do. And they wanted to do this, and they wanted to do that. And then immediately following that, there were three asks. The first ask was, okay, you're all like activists and you want to make a difference. There's something going on in Harrisburg, you know, the Poor People's Campaign and lifting up people and working with unions and blah, blah, blah. There's a bus leaving from your own community. Here's the sign up board for it. Let's send it around, right? And there are about 30 people in the room. And then the next one was a really tough ask. It was called, have coffee with your senator. I have an inside scoop of where the senator's going to be on this day. Let's go have coffee, right?
Yeah.
And so how hard was that? That community, and then the third ask was that come to DemFest, an amusement park.
What a terrible thing to have to do.
I know. So do you know how many of these
activists? Coffee or an amusement park?
Yeah,
which one?
I know, tough ass, right? This wasn't even knocking on doors or making phone calls, phone banking,
or the actual tough things to do.
Not a single person signed up for any of them.
So
when you say that showing up at a meeting or doing something on social media is being part of the blue wave, I don't want to see 2016 again, because it's not.
Yeah.
We actually have to lift it up. So
everybody has to go one more step or three more steps on that ladder of engagement.
Yes.
Where you were in 2016, everybody needs to bump it up.
Which is what they just did in California yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday was the primary, and we were afraid that Democrats were going to be shut out because of their...
There were more of them because they're
too involved, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The map would have been a nightmare.
So the thing here for our listeners that aren't aware of California primaries, they don't have party primaries. The top two finishers go on to the general election. whether it's two Democrats, two Republicans, or one Democrat, one Republican, or a Democrat and a Green, you get the picture.
So the challenge with the seven that were targeted because they were won by Hillary Clinton but were held by Republicans was that, yeah, when you have two Republicans running in a race and eight Democrats, and then the vote gets split in the
divide
top two.
The Democratic yes, vote
and so
too much.
It would be like there were too many enthusiastic people running for office, and that's going to doom us. But the fact was is that we won either
they
first or second place in every single one, which meant people had to do something.
Yes.
They actually had, and look at our low voter turnout that we just had in Pennsylvania, right? And so I really like the idea of a blue lift because it means that we are acting, that we are implementing, that we are creating a movement, that we are actually physically doing something. And so
a lift is passive, or a wave is passive.
Wave is passive.
You know, a wave sort of sweeps you up with it, you know, but a lift is everybody grab a corner, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and
I like that.
So I'm excited about how we're going to implement this in northeastern and north central Pennsylvania as part of us bringing the blue wave into.
Yeah, and we have exciting opportunities. You know, we're recording here in Columbia County. We've recently joined forces with Action Together Northeastern PA with Columbia County Indivisible. So we're looking at a larger regional network to do just that and to lift up the whole region and move us in the direction that we want to go.
So if somebody is listening to this and they're like,
excuse me,
what's the ladder of engagement? How do I get more involved? What would they do? What's their next step?
Well, that's a great question, which we have a good answer for, because we have an event coming up to celebrate the fact that this is the direction that we're going. On June 13th at our county headquarters here on Main Street, we have
Bloomsburg,
celebration of the fact that Columbia County Indivisible has joined Action Together. And one of the things that we'll be doing is talking about these different things that you can do to get involved.
Canvassing, phone banking, sending postcards.
Coming to rallies, coming to other events, and also including some social things to try to, you know, make it more fun and more of a sense of community to be involved. So we want this to be a celebration, but also a real tool for figuring out what we do next. So I think that would be a great opportunity.
So that's June 13th?
June 13th.
At what time?
6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Right. And so I really think that this is what it's going to take.
Yeah.
Right? This is our what's it going to take and what can go wrong, too. Because if we are not engaged, we're going to see what happened before.
Yes.
That's right. Exactly. That's what's going to happen. So speaking of that, we had what happened in Philadelphia, right, with the Eagles. And Jess, maybe you can lead us on this. And I mean, we are Pennsylvania. It would be, this is our state thing to talk about, right?
Yeah, we have to talk about.
Let's talk about it. And we're far enough east to be mostly Eagles fans.
So
there's
I
a few Pittsburgh
to,
ones, but mostly Eagles fans.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be the same if it was the Steelers as well. I think we would be in the same boat.
Anywhere in the country, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But here we are in Pennsylvania, so we'll talk about it. So I think we would like to maybe rename Chicken and Waffles Eagles and Waffles this time, because the president has uninvited the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl champions from this year, which is remarkable for a whole bunch of other reasons.
That's a waffle, right?
You're
invited, you're not invited, right?
What happened? Yeah. Inviting them because he was
I found my triangle.
We got through that whole intro.
He
didn't ring the bell. And I thought he forgot about it.
I was running into the other room to grab it.
But he didn't. He did literally ran into the other room to get it. That's okay. Yes, ring the bell. Very good. So the president, because he was afraid of being embarrassed by the fact that some players did not want to go,
we're going
to
show up,
decided that he was going to make it about the totally manufactured controversy about the national anthem, which he probably doesn't know the words
to. So he was afraid, right? So that's the chicken part, right?
So he was able to
chicken and
waffle.
He waffled it
all at the same time.
I love it. I saw some sort of post about one of the Eagles was saying to Obama to invite us over for a barbecue instead, which I would much rather go.
Oh my god,
to
that would be so much more fun.
I know.
Oh my god, can you imagine?
A party.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So I think the question then becomes: okay, so we're having this discussion yet again about the NFL and the national anthem and supporting the troops, which I'm not sure what any of this has to do with supporting the troops, but that's the argument that's always laid out in these culture wars.
Not like peacefully protesting is.
Not peacefully protesting and not paying any attention to why the peaceful protest began in the beginning, which was dealing with police brutality and systemic racism. But instead, we're talking about this and we're getting people riled up and mad at the NFL and mad at NFL players. And you know what we're not talking about because we're talking about all these other things? We're not talking about immigration policy that is cruel and inhumane as children absolutely. Are being taken away from their parents at the border.
Right.
We're not talking about the escalation of the contact between the Trump campaign and Russian officials during the 2016 election. We're not talking about all of the other things that are going on. 5,000
dead in Puerto Rico because
of Irma. Oh, right,
we're not talking about... not talking about Puerto Rico. We're not talking about the fact that the president threw paper towels at people in Puerto Rico as though that was helpful. You know, we're not discussing any of those things. We're talking about
you get this a paper towel.
BS.
And you get a paper towel. And you get a paper towel.
Cultural nonsense that is unimportant.
Yeah.
And it takes something where you have a sports team goes, meets the president, does a thing. It's supposed to be happy and encouraging to kids who are excited about this sort of thing, and makes it a totally political nonsense.
And let's be clear here. You know, when the conversation is about stupid culture wars, and it's not about the failure of Donald Trump's leadership and effectiveness as our executive.
The corruption.
They win. They win when it's about culture wars, and they lose when it's about the
substance.
So let's talk a little bit about substance. We have a nomination for the courts, and maybe you can lead us on that as well, Jazz.
We do,
So David Porter, right?
And you look at, Santorum's. I mean, we talked about what's it going to take, but this is also a what can go wrong situation too, because David Porter has been nominated to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals.
And that's federal.
That is federal, yes. Federal bench, which is something that I think is also not getting enough attention. The fact that all of these, you know, judicial extremists are being nominated to the federal courts, and we're not paying enough attention to that. So you've got David Porter, who is ultra-conservative, right-wing activist judge. He was blocked from a district court judgeship in 2014 for being an extremist, where he was nominated by Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania. Gross, right? He was...
Should have given me a warning.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Can't control my gag reflex.
Sorry for Dwayne, if you ended up with any on you there.
I need a trigger warning when we mention
that. Oh, my God. Between your arms going up and now, like...
There's a lot going on here, you guys.
Yeah, wow. Well, yeah. These are close quarters.
So, he's been an opponent of the Affordable Care Act because, you know, people having health insurance is not something that he's all about. And has just a long record of being all of the things that you would think he is. Anti-choice, anti-LGBTQ rights, anti-immigration, anti-environment, and super pro-gun, which is, you know, exactly what you would expect for somebody who is ready. Drum roll. Can I get a drum roll? Thank you.
Sweet.
Rick Santorum's personal attorney and advisor. Exactly.
Ugh. Rick Santorum. Ugh. You guys know what a Santorum is?
We do.
Oh,
we're
my gosh.
Not doing that right
Look
now.
It up on the Urban
we're
Dictionary.
Not doing that right now.
Yeah.
But, yes. So you look at someone like this who.
Moving on.
Right on.
I was an elbow. Let's move along.
Let's move on. But you have someone like this who was nominated by Senator Pat Toomey. Senator Bob Casey has been vocally in opposition to this. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee is ignoring a protocol where one senator from a state can basically say this nominee is unacceptable, which is a longstanding Senate tradition, and we're just not paying attention to those anymore. So that's where we're at. So he had a hearing today. I haven't looked to see how that's going or how it went yet.
And who decides?
The Senate Judiciary Committee will decide if he advances to the Senate, and then it goes to the Senate for a full vote.
Okay.
You know, I have a quote here that basically I'll just read it for you. It says, "On behalf of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations committed to promoting and protecting the civil and human rights of all persons in the United States, I write in strong opposition to the confirmation of David Porter to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. And, you know, I think that that kind of like says it. I mean, what does that say? Yeah, that's the president and CEO of that organization, Vanita Gupta. Yeah. So, I mean, that just...
Yeah, I had no idea about this until I walked into the studio. It's so dangerous. Yeah.
Exactly, because we're too busy wondering if he knows the words to God Bless America.
Which he does not.
Right.
That's a separate thing.
I know, right?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when we look at this week... Thank you,
I'm glad you know it. I know it. You know it too, right?
Taylor knows the words. You know the
words. Okay, there are a lot of people out there who don't, but you know what? This should be a... Yeah, you do it. Stand beside her.
Thank you, Taylor.
Yeah, so, but you know... All those other people who don't know it, they don't happen to be the president of the United States, right?
And we're looking at a week where I don't think the importance of the federal courts can be overemphasized. When you look at the decision that came down on Monday about the bake shop owner in Colorado.
Right.
And that win, which I don't think... You know, I don't think people connect the lower courts and the fact that when you know, nominate these people to the lower courts, they then become the pool of potential nominees to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And just to explain a little bit about that bakery thing, it was a narrow decision. And I don't mean by the number of votes, but I mean in terms of the scope of the decision. I think it was like a 7-2.
It was 7-2.
Yeah, but so it wasn't a narrow vote, but it was narrow in terms of the scope, which I know that HRC, the Human Rights Campaign is pointing that out, and so are others, about how, you know, this really isn't a statement about what who you're legally allowed to deny the LGBT community from things like this, but yet there were, they felt that some of the rights were denied.
And more it seemed to me, from my understanding of it, was that the case wasn't handled properly leading up to the federal courts. So that is my understanding, that the ruling had more to do with that, which is good, in air quotes.
It's a non-decision decision, right? Yeah. Which gets very confusing. When you get into the weeds of trying to explain this, it gets lost, completely lost. Yeah. On the public, when you say the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the bakery, that makes it sound like what?
What does that mean? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, I could be mistaken, but I thought the point of this case was that baking is art, and that you can't
that
be made to produce art. Like, you can't be forced to produce art.
Right. That was the argument put forward. But...
So, I don't know. How that can be construed broadly
You know, that carrot cake, I think, is proof of that, right? It is art, right?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Taylor, we didn't bring you any.
I'm upset. I'm sorry.
I mean, you should be.
Yeah. I do have a small slice in the refrigerator at home because she gave some for Chris and I to take home with us.
You probably didn't want to tell Taylor that. That was dumb.
Yeah.
Because now Taylor's going to be even sadder.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing you don't do these things live, because, you know, you might want to call ADT and you know.
Make sure. Well, yeah, we do a drive-by, call the neighbor.
20 minutes.
Sure, yeah. So I guess the point of just, you know, maybe, and we should probably move on from the bakery, is that, you know, the fact is that by the Supreme Court not actually taking that part up, I believe that in a way they acknowledge the equal rights of LGBTQ people to be free of that kind of discrimination, because they could have broadened the scope of their decision and said, you know,
it could have been problematic.
Yes, it could have really been that way.
That's good.
And I think by doing it this way, they got some of the more liberal judges to then, you know, get on board with it.
Right.
And I mean that with all the love in my heart, by the way, you know, liberal or conservative. In other words, they kind of work together to a degree to say that, you know, we're on board with the way that we're going to issue this decision.
Right.
And I think that was important to do. So
I wonder how Merrick Garland would have voted.
That's a good question. Yeah. Well, and the fact that you do have people, like, before anyone read the decision, I think everybody jumped to conclusions real quick, where it's like, oh my God, Elena Kagan voted with the majority, and it's like, wait. But if she did that, there must have been a reason, so let's look at it. And that's where you see that it really wasn't about, you know, it was focused on the handling of the case in that local entity.
So here's my disappointment. I wish that they would have shown the courage to just say that the LGBT community should be treated like every other community when it comes to public service. Yeah. Well, and but they didn't. And right. So I have to say there was a lot of chicken on that waffle right there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, imagine if this had been a baker refusing to bake a cake for a black wedding or you know, where two people are, you know, African-Americans are getting married, or an interracial couple. Like, I think it would have gone down differently, to be honest.
Right.
Right, right.
But here we are again.
Here we are again, right? And so, yeah. So, well, we talked about we packed this full with all kinds of things. We heard Taylor's story. We talked about the Blue Wave, Blue Lift, and mentioned the California races and talked about how their primary worked yesterday. Yeah. We talked about the Eagles and what was going on there and the God Bless America that's not known by our president.
Yeah.
There's all the outrage about that from the NFL
video.
The video is really bad. Like, he got through the God Bless America, but when he actually got to Land That I Love, he actually stumbled a little bit even on that part of it. And then the next of it is stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. No, he just completely just stopped. He didn't even try that part. And yeah, but pigeons. I don't know what he's like. And then he got to the God Bless America again, and then it was okay. Right?
Yeah,
you gotta watch it. It's really, I know.
Somebody on Twitter did offer to pay someone in the White House correspondence pool $200 to ask the president if he knew the words to the national anthem, and then the pot got larger, so I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I'd like to see him try to do it.
So, and then we talked about
I
offered $200, but I don't know if the pool's up to awesome. Now.
We talked about David Porter and that position, which is very important because that's not getting enough attention at all. So I'm glad we spent time on that. We even touched on a little bit about what's happening at our borders, you know, with the kids being separated. And we had that family detention center in Reading in Pennsylvania, which has been, you know,
a real source. So it's not as remote as you may think
in
this area.
We've had some people from Columbia County actually be taken there. So, you know, that has happened. People are being rounded up. That was kind of a full discussion that we had there. Yeah, so we want to thank you for tuning in and listening today. I want to say once again that we are lights in the night. We are hope for our future. We are not alone. We are Lightning Bug.
Woo!
Okay.